Hey, everybody, before we start the podcast, we have a great, big, huge, mega announcement to make. We are going to be the hosts and MCs of the Fandom Legacy Convention.
Fandom Legacy Con is a three-day multi-fandom event focused on attendee engagement, immersion, and building a community.
It's a comics, gaming, and anime convention that's going on March 6th through 8th, 2020 at the Hyatt Regency North Dallas in Richardson, Texas.
So come on out and be a part of Fandom. For more information, check out FandomLegacyCon.com.
We hope to see you there.
Please listen carefully.
And now, live from the Zudio in McKinney, Texas, it's the Assuming Positions Podcast, featuring two guys flapping gums and being chums, Kevin and Mikey.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Assuming Positions Podcast. Kevin over here.
And Mikey over here.
And we are back with part two of creating a con.
Dun, dun, dun.
Con artists. Knocking over a liquor store to create your convention.
You really love that, don't you?
I like saying knocking over a liquor store. It's really funny to me because mentally it just it makes me think of like you can't literally knock over a liquor.
It's made of like Legos, and it's like yeah.
a little Lego. That's a great Lego set. Lego liquor store.
Lego liquor store.
How easy would that be to knock over? All you got to do is push it.
So anyway, as you hear, we're here again with Zach and Mary from Fandom Legacy Con, and this is part two of creating con. We're gonna get into. Well, our last episode, we talked about all the preparation and the groundwork you need for starting a con. We talked money, we talked location, we talked all that kind of fun stuff. Now, we're going to talk about putting the con on, the nuts and the bolts and all of the things that go on, the stuff that is behind the scenes of the fun that you're having. Because all the stuff we talked about in the last podcast was stuff that happens before you even show up.
Yeah, you have an idea, and yet you go to make it happen.
Mostly before you even let people know about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, so, at this point in the plan, you are just now letting people know about it.
Right.
Yes, your website's up, your social media's up, and you have no one on it.
Yep, and that's where we're going to start today. Yep.
So, the first thing is you have your website, you have everything, the venue is there, but there's just the two of you, right?
Yep.
So, you get to start getting peoples.
So, here's the thing that I want you guys to think about.
Okay.
You're going to a con, yes. Right? You're looking for a convention to attend. Mm-hmm. What is the thing that you look for in a convention? What do you, as a con goer, want to see?
Oh, as a con goer, it would have to be something that relevant to my interests. If I'm going to play games, I want to see good games being run.
There you go.
If I'm there, if it's like sci-fi or something, I want to see what guests are there I might be interested in.
Yep. I'm with you. For me, I'm going for the spectacle, for the people. I want to see what famous people are there that I can schmooze with and shake hands and get autographs. I'm that type of fanboy. Mm-hmm.
So what we're getting at here is the concept of content before patronage.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So you are going to get nobody if you just put a name out there. You've got your website, but there's nothing on it that's interesting. You have no services. Mm-hmm. You have no content. You have no panels. You have no artists. You have no dealers. You have no celebrities. You've got nothing and nobody's coming to your con. Yeah.
Now, there are some differences there. So, for example, there was the Power Rangers con a couple of years ago.
Okay.
The big thing was that they got all the Power Rangers from like the first and second series, right? And they got them all in one room. But that con wouldn't have been as successful if it was just those guests, right? You have to have like some panels about Power Rangers, maybe watch some shows about them, stuff like that.
Was Amy Jo Johnson there?
I think she was.
Oh, dang it.
I'm with you.
It was in Texas, too.
Well, what? Okay, see, that should have been my answer. I shouldn't have taken so long. I should have just said Amy Jo Johnson. What do you want at a convention? Amy Jo Johnson?
But I get your point. Like, even for a Power Rangers convention, you go, okay, Amy Jo Johnson's there. You go see her. She does her panel. And then you're there for the rest of the weekend just waiting around for the other Power Rangers, I guess. I mean, like.
Exactly. So it's all about before you can really get people, you have to get content and you have to get a diversity of content. Mm-hmm. So this is where that process starts. If you're going to have a dealer's room, dealer's room and artist alley advertising first. This may sound a little underhanded. just pre-warning there, but it's really not. So when you're getting artists and dealers in, that is one of the few parts of a convention that nobody is going to complain about nobody else having gotten to first. So there's the concept of nobody wants to cut open the cake, right? It's a brand new cake. Nobody wants to cut into it to get that first slice.
Gotcha.
But once somebody gets that first slice, it starts going from there.
That cake is fair game. Gotcha.
So artists and dealers first, because they're going to get in on the ground floor of a new convention.
Okay.
Especially if you put your pricing for the artist alley and the dealer's room booths accordingly, that it's a first-year convention.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of those artists who are out there are actually really excited to get into new conventions because they have a different feel to them.
They do. Brand new first-year cons feel very different from like 10th-year cons. Way more fun, in my opinion. So that's where you start. It also helps you get your money off the ground.
Okay.
And that's where I was talking about that cash flow, you know, starting with a minimal budget. Mm. You're able to bring in artists and bring in dealers on the very ground floor. And that's sort of your starting budget for advertising.
Yeah, because that's my newbie question. As far as dealers and artists go, those are the part of the con that's actually paying you to be a part of it. Like, is that how it works out budget-wise?
So there's two parts of the budget.
Okay.
So there's the sort of before the convention, before you get attendees part, which is funded mostly, if not entirely, by the artists and the dealers.
Gotcha.
And, you know, outsourced talent like, you know, maid cafes or whatever else you're going to have there that sometimes pay you.
Those maid cafes are so silly. But anyway, continue.
Come out and see Kira Kira Maid Cafe, Phantom Legacy Con.
I wasn't slandering.
No. You have to. The Mikey uses the word silly, yes. And it's a very loving. No, seriously. I'm not even trying to defend him.
Yeah,
he's one of my best buddies. Silly.
It's a loving silly.
Silly is a loving word.
They're worth it just to experience. If you have no idea what it is, it's worth it to go to a con and just experience what these cafes are.
Absolutely silly, and it is absolutely an experience.
They put on a show. It's great.
They do. And it's totally out there. Mm-hmm. It's fun.
But those fall into the artist and dealers that you're talking about.
Exactly. Okay. And that's what pays for the bulk of your pre-registration expenses. So that's what pays for putting down the deposit on the hotel.
Okay.
That's what pays for a lot of your advertising, a lot of your AV, that sort of stuff, because a lot of attendees are not going to pre-register until, say, you know, a month or so away from the con.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you're also dealing with different people's schedules and all that, and when people are available, and I can only imagine that's a headache.
Exactly.
Are there, like, you kind of mentioned that there was a pricing for a beginning con. Are there kind of industry standards for pricing for
There are not, and no. That's sort of a shame. The way that a lot of convention owners will price their dealers' rooms, especially when they're first getting into it, is they'll take the cost of the hotel rental, divide that by the number of dealer spaces and artist alley spaces, and then come up with a number that will pay that.
Interesting.
Basically.
Yeah, it is interesting.
And that was good advice that we got as well. And that was part of how we did ours. Now, we also cut ours down as well. So we're actually, and this is something to plan for, plan to lose money. Mm-hmm. So we're planning to lose money on that.
Yeah.
So that's how you get the pricing on that. You also have to think about what is your expected attendance and how much money are they going to spend. Divide that by your number of dealers and think about whether or not they'd be going home with that amount of money and be happy with it.
I got you.
So if you've got 10 people to come into your con and you got 50 dealers, you're going to get, you know, it's going to be a bad day.
Angry dealers.
Angry mob. Dealers. So that's the other thing, is you got to keep everyone that you bring in happy.
But that's crazy to think about, because my only perspective is a graphic designer. There are industry books out there that sort of give you the advice of, here's your guideline, here's your baseline, here's the rough idea of what people are charging, what people are making, the sort of cash flow that's going on. I don't think I know of any resource for that for a con. Like,
there is not.
So you're going in blind, into the dark.
You go into it and think about the average for the area, and the average for the area is going to be very different depending where you are.
Yeah.
Texas, it's a good $100 to $200 higher than it was in Florida.
Oh, that makes sense.
Per space. Yeah. So
craziness.
No industry standard, just sort of feel it out and see what people will pay.
That's cool.
And that's a horrible way to say it, right? Like, let's see how much money we can get. But, you know, you gotta make sure that everyone breaks even and everyone's happy.
That's the key.
Yeah.
Finding that price that makes people happy.
Yep.
So I'm going to ask, I know what the distinction is, but I'm going to ask the dumb question just for a listener who might know.
That's
so
the part we're playing.
The distinction between the what an artist alley is versus a dealer room.
Depends on the convention.
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
actually a lot of gray area
yeah,
there.
Exactly.
And a lot of conventions don't specify between the two.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the way that a lot of people look at it is the artist alley is for stuff that's homemade for very small businesses. You know, some of them may not even have a business. It may just be somebody coming out and selling what they enjoyed making.
As an individual, gotcha.
As an individual. And yeah, dealer's room is for more...
mass-produced stuff.
Yeah, more mass-produced stuff, like not homemade
right.
resale
so it's
stuff.
Like an artist alley would be more like Etsy.
Exactly.
And the dealer room would be more like a hobby store.
Okay.
So
exactly. Yeah. Now, that's not to say that there's a limit between the two. So a dealer or an artist can always usually go and be a dealer.
Yeah.
Artist alley spaces are usually smaller. Dealer's room spaces are usually, say, 8x8, 10x10. Artist alley is usually like... 4x6. So artist alley is usually very small.
So in finding these people, did you put out an open application to say, hey, if you're a dealer and artist, come apply to our con, or did you go seek people out? What was the trade-off there?
All of the above.
Oh, okay.
So first off, you got to get registered on the normal sites, animecons.com, fancons.com. That's where a lot of vendors, I'm just going to use vendor from now as a general term. That's where a lot of vendors go to look to fill up their schedules.
Okay.
You also need to be hitting the pavement, going to other conventions, talking to them. There is so much power behind a smile and a handshake. It is not even funny.
Oh, yeah. And talking to people face to face. And even if you're running something very specific, like a gaming convention, you should branch out a little bit. Think about what your audience would go to. Zach and I went to a big Halloween festival, and we found some vendors there who are actually coming to our convention.
Oh, fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was a drag show Halloween show. It was actually a lot of fun. They put on a great show.
I believe it.
You don't have to tell Mikey. He went to the Charlie XCX concert.
Oh, man. It was Halloween in July. It was great.
So a really neat statistic for you guys. 67% of fans that consider themselves super fans of something are super fans of at least three things.
Ah.
So that's why you're seeing a lot of these multi-fandom conventions showing up. And may or may not be why we're doing a multi-fandom convention.
And a multi-fandom podcast.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're telling me Kevin just doesn't like Star Wars? He likes other things too?
I like other things too. This is why, whether to our detriment or not, we don't really care. But there's a lot of podcasts that are just Star Wars podcasts. And we'll talk about Star Wars when we want to.
Yeah.
But guess what?
We're super fans of a lot of stuff.
Yeah, we want to talk about everything.
There you go.
And there's so much stuff in the nerd world, and I get it. So the conventions having multiple stuff makes sense.
Now, a note there, something that we're running into, it's difficult to balance.
Yeah.
Especially if you are, as owners, particularly fond of one thing, like Mary and I are very fond of anime. It's difficult to make sure that you have a good swatch of things for a multi-fandom con.
It also depends, it must depend on where you are. Because around here in Dallas, because Funimation is here.
Huge, huge anime following.
Yeah, the anime is much stronger here than it is in other cities I've experienced conventions at.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
But it's cool to hear that you guys, like, you really could, because it is your con, you're doing it your way, you're setting it up. You really could say, like, hey, Mary and I love LARPing, we love Vampire the Masquerade, and we love...
Tacos,
there you go. So all our dealer rooms are going to be taco-fared goods, you know, with a little bit of vampire teeth.
Are you
in
getting
there
a taco truck to come out?
Taco, you know, Fiesta 2020.
We're talking about it.
Can
we get a pizza truck to come out?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
Are there pizza trucks? There should be pizza trucks.
If not, we're starting one.
Yeah.
You heard it here first.
Assuming positions, pizza truck.
But my question is, was it just you were thinking of general nerd things that people might be into, or were you talking to other people at cons to see what they wanted to see in the dealer's room, or how did you decide to go beyond just what your preferences were?
So Mary's mentioned a few times our background in data science.
Okay.
And that's where all of this started, was we went through...
Nerd? No.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? If you're running a business, get a data scientist.
And a graphic designer.
And a graphic designer. Please get a graphic designer.
Oh, wait, hold on. We're both graphic designers, but we don't have a data scientist at all.
One of us has to study data. Quick, get on it.
Oh, no. My brain. Brad, you're going to be our data scientist.
All right.
Get a data scientist or a data analyst, because they'll be able to spot trends and interesting things that may not have been seen. Gotcha. So when I'm quoting these percentages to you guys, that's based on hundreds of thousands of people that have been surveyed and sifting through that data and looking at what people actually want. You know, a lot of these companies like Eventbrite, SurveyMonkey, a lot of these places have already done the investigation for you. And you just have to look at the data and see what you can pull from it.
That's cool.
So what have you pulled from it? That begs the question.
A lot of, that could be a whole podcast in and of itself. the data trends of nerdery.
Just a few highlights.
So we talked about this a little bit at Anime Dallas. The female population in fandom.
Yeah.
Especially in
anime.
Yeah.
Actually outweighs the male population now. And that is a huge difference from the 20% to 80% that it was back, you know, just a couple of years ago.
Oh, I believe it.
Yeah, we got our numbers we actually got some demographic numbers on our podcast listeners. And our female demographic is like in their 20s. And our male demographic is old dudes like us. So it's kind of funny because that's kind of the places that we've gone to, the conventions we've gone to. We've gone to anime conventions a bunch, and we've gone to like gaming conventions and comic conventions. So it's literally the people we've met out there who start listening to us. That's what the demographic is. Yeah. So, yeah.
A couple other fun ones. Biggest spenders goes comic fans, and then anime fans blow everyone else out of the water.
I thought it was anime over comics, no?
They're like tied and tied depending on which data pool you're looking at.
Okay.
The other one is when you're looking at what people buy, nobody buys cosplays at conventions, even at cosplay cons.
Because everybody's making it themselves?
Exactly.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
They should be, even though we ran into plenty of people at Anime Dallas that were like, I bought this. And we're like,
no, make it yourself.
Yeah, yeah. There's actually a stigma about it. I'm sure you guys have seen like the stigma against store-bought stuff.
Yep.
Go ahead.
Accessories are things that, I'm sorry, I keep like interjecting.
No, hey, yeah, that's what it's all about.
Actually.
That's the best thing you can say on a nerd podcast.
Yeah, you just have to push up your glasses. Well, actually.
So even though full cosplays aren't very popular in dealers' rooms, accessories can be a popular thing, like different kinds of bows. There was a kilt vendor at Anime Dallas who actually seemed like he was doing pretty well.
Yep, absolutely.
You find that perfect piece to just cap off. It's the cherry on the cake of like, oh, this was the piece I was missing for my cosplay. Here it is.
Exactly.
Other interesting little bits. People don't go to, so I'll say this, generally, people are going to conventions for celebrities less and less and less. It has been a consistent downward trend over the last 5 years.
I dispute that. I want to go for a celeb. No, I'm just kidding.
I said generally.
That's interesting. I wonder why.
Because people want the experience more than the single opportunity.
People
are going to conventions more and more. Over the long term, that's why you're starting to see conventions starting Wednesday, Thursday, and going all the way through Monday sometimes.
There you go.
Because people want that longer term experience, and they're tired of going to cons, seeing the guy for 5 minutes, and then being done.
Yeah, wait in line, pay money, stand next to him for 30 seconds, take the picture.
Have a really awkward conversation. Yeah.
And then,
especially in this day and age, we were talking about social media. I would say for at least Argent, like this new generation, it's really easy if you're a fan of somebody to reach out and have an interaction with them over social media.
Yeah.
So the con isn't really a place for that. But on that note, we're talking about dealer's rooms. We're talking about artist alleys. I know that you guys have a focus a little bit more beyond that. Like those aren't going to be your only rooms at the convention. It's not just going to be the dealer's room and the artist alley. What else have you guys sort of budgeted for this extravaganza? What other rooms do we have in stock?
So before I continue on that train, this is sort of a preamble to that.
Do it.
Don't think about that you're going to be paying people to attend your convention. So there's a lot of people that want to come out and make their own money.
Gotcha.
Or they want to come out and have fun and attend and basically come out for neutral cost because they enjoy their hobbies. It's not about so much paying for talent. It's about giving people the platform to perform and to run their own stuff nowadays. So a lot of panels, a lot of extra rooms, like what we're going to talk about in a moment, they're going to do their own thing. And you basically just have to give them space. And there is a ton of people like that. And honestly, it goes back to the art of the negotiation, out of the deal. Art of the negotiation, because I refuse to say that.
Yes.
Let's figure out something that works best for both parties. It's not, you know, compromise isn't when everyone's unhappy. It's when everyone's very happy.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And you have to vet them, right? And there has
website
to be...
and social media.
Is that what you go for?
Yeah, check our previous episode.
Because in being at conventions, we've run in running a little table there. We run into a lot of great people, but there are some people you run into, and you're like, okay, this person wouldn't be the best at running a panel.
Yeah, it's almost like, did you sneak in here? We won't tell anybody, but did you sneak in here?
Yeah, we found out through kind of a back channel that some conventions have a do not hire list.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
It's not a do not hire. It's basically reviews. It's a good way to look at it.
But like Kevin was saying, there is a difference between people that are verified and you can sort of use social media and use a website to sort of see whether this person is legit or just sort of trying to make a buck, like we were talking about last episode.
And there's a lot of importance to professional communication. If you guys are looking at starting an artist alley booth, a dealer's booth, panelists, send your emails, have somebody spell check them. Don't shorten things into text speak. Be a professional, be an intelligent person, and have that come through in your communications, please.
Yeah, spell out all your words. Yeah, I'm with you.
And if there is a tick box in the application that says, I will immediately be denied because I was not paying attention and checked this, don't check it. Read the check boxes, please.
I think it has like a 50% check rate, doesn't it?
Wait, you have a check box?
Yeah,
says,
explain what? It. We missed out
so
on this.
It got to the point where you get so many applications.
Right.
It's difficult to go through all of them. So you got to have something of a initial filter.
Gotcha.
That's our initial filter is in our checkboxes of our legalities. There's actually something saying, don't check this. You're going to be immediately denied.
That's
it's checked way more than it should.
I love that. That tickles me.
I'm with you. It's a bot deterrent, but the fact that so many people like checked it, not paying attention, just also.
And it's clear in the rest of their application too, because they'll either it looks like somebody was speaking into their phone,
gotcha.
And then changing every other word. You know, it's really obvious when somebody does not want to put the full effort into it.
I got you.
You're still giggling.
I'm still giggling over that. That's crazy.
We shouldn't have checked that box. Yeah. Now we're learning about it.
Yeah, we're going to be hosting this convention, so obviously we didn't check the box. Actually, we didn't join them.
They did.
We did. We checked the box.
No, I didn't.
Check the box.
What's in the box?
What's in the box? All right, so we got dealers. We got artists. We got panelists.
So a note on the panelists.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's a couple of ways to go about that now. There's a lot of people in the community that want to run their content.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people that are going to apply. There's a lot of really cool stuff out there. That's one way to go. That's a great way to go. You may not always get the best content, but that's okay because it's fun and you find some really unique, interesting stuff.
I got you.
There's groups out there now, and this was not the case a few years ago, that will come out and run panels for you, like as a service, and they have 50, 60, 70 different panels that they can run. They've run before.
It's just a company that says, hey, you're having a con, we can run panels for you?
Exactly, and it's a great way if you're a first-year con to fill out your roster.
Why not? Yeah. Makes sense.
Wow. I mean, this is a big business that we didn't even realize.
So were you approached by some of these people?
Several.
Okay. What are they offering? Is it like, hey, we'll run sword demonstrations or we'll run cosplay? Like,
It's a huge, and that's how these businesses are doing so well.
Okay.
It's a huge menu. And it's like, one of them sent me, I think it was a 40-page PDF of their menu of panels.
Wow.
Which was great. I thought it was incredibly well done.
Yep.
Wow.
So then how did you guys narrow down the people that you did invite to your con? I imagine it's sort of maybe a personal aspect, like what people that clicked with you maybe, like you're talking about the people filling out the forms and not doing the checkbox. That's an easy sort of pass, but
professionalism, uniqueness, and diversity.
Gotcha.
And we're still doing it. You're going to be sifting through content until 2 weeks before you're gone. And then there's going to be somebody that, that submits something the day of and then is really angry you didn't select them.
Yeah.
That's their fault for being last minute, but can't tell that person that. I get it. Yeah.
So now you have your dealers to go. People love going to dealers' rooms. We've talked about this when we did the clan thing. You got your people going to the dealers' rooms, and then you got your people going to the panels. Yep. Those are different people. Then you also have to deal with who's there running it. The two of you aren't just running it. You need a staff.
You need a staff. You cannot run this alone.
I would hope it's not you two running this con alone. Like, no, you two are great people. No, but
they're going to be like, they're going to be like, and us. They're like, you're the host. You're going to be, well, we didn't realize what we were saying when we said we'd be the host.
Exactly.
We're going to be, there's a problem.
They haven't read their contract yet.
Wait, we have contract?
Don't ask too many questions.
Don't check the box.
Don't check the box.
So staff is going to find you a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's, you know, you're going around advertising, you're talking to people, you're explaining your ideas.
Yep.
Someone's going to get passionate about it.
It's mostly volunteer, right?
Or yes and no. So there's volunteers and there's staff. The staff is expected to work a certain number of hours per week.
Gotcha.
You know, they get a little paycheck.
Ah.
They get, you know, extra little bits because they work really hard. The staff of a convention works really, really hard.
Is that standard for all conventions? Because we've been to some where we don't think that anyone's getting paid.
It should be.
Okay.
It's really unfair to ask your staff to work for free, guys. Your staff.
Yeah. Seriously, I can think of, I'm not going to name it, but I can think of a couple we've been to where I guarantee you all they were getting was the ability to go eat the food in the food suite.
I believe it. Yeah. You get to show up. That's your benefit and your perk.
You get to sit in con ops and eat donuts.
But take care of your people and your people will take care of you.
100%. Good attitude to have for sure. You were talking about free resources for setting up your con and just getting the network out there as far as like the anime con website and all that. Is there a resource for hiring volunteers and staff, or like how did you guys go about that? Was it just people you knew?
College students are a great resource.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I don't mean to laugh, but it makes complete sense.
It's, you know, you hear a lot about, you know, people taking advantage of interns and whatnot, but really when you're coming out of college, there are not a lot of places, especially nowadays, that will hire somebody on without experience.
Gotcha.
You know, you get, you know, places that are saying, you know, we want 50 years of experience and we want you to be 20 years old. So conventions are, yeah, exactly. You end up with these people that really desperately need a place to start. And they're great people. They're brilliant people. They're, you know, some of the most dedicated and motivated people I've ever met.
I got you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great thing for you and a great thing for them.
Do you find that people are reaching out to you? Is it people that are like seeking they have their nerd interest. They say, hey, I'm all about cosplay. This con is doing cosplay. Do they reach out to you to say, hey, I need practical experience? Or is this more just like these people are available for hire. Let's staff them and we're done.
So a little bit of both, right? And a little bit of an extra thing. So people will reach out to you because they're looking for conventions to be a part of. There's a huge community of people that's a part of almost every convention in the area. And it was the same in Florida. It's the same up here. You'll have people that you meet just going around doing your regular rounds, meeting with different groups. One of the people that we brought on, we actually met them through the AOE.
Mm-hmm. What's the AOE for audience members that may not know?
The Anime Orchestra Ensemble.
Ooh, the jam session that will be
full orchestra.
There you go. Okay. Yeah.
So we talked to her originally as representative of the AOE, and then we ended up bringing her on. Larry is awesome.
Nice.
But you'll also be going to other conventions. It's a community. Be part of the community.
Yep.
And get talking to people, right? We were talking to a couple of guys at Anime North Texas.
Yep.
And they were very friendly and, you know, people want to be a part of the community.
And I'd imagine that, yes, there's new conventions starting up and there are the legacy conventions that have been there for years. But I would imagine you do see sort of similar faces in the goings on of the month events. And you sort of see, hey, you're here at all these things. It seems like you're passionate about it. Let's have a conversation. Let's build this network and
the
take you over to my side kind of thing.
The more people, you got to be careful about the taking over to your side.
Okay.
Because there are some convention owners that are very sensitive to that and understandably so. Poaching is a big thing. Talent poaching.
There is there is convention territory, convention gangs almost.
What do you think the clan system is?
I know, hey, we're talking about knocking over liquor stores. I don't want to get in any
tough
trouble.
Tough guy snaps.
Did we just join a gang?
We did.
But yeah, there's absolutely people that you talk to that, and the more experience they have, the more of a different side and a different viewpoint they're going to bring to your con.
Hell yeah.
So once you've got your panels, I like to call them outsourced rooms, right? So you've got your dealer's room, you've got your artist alley.
Yep.
There's more to a con than just dealer's room, artist alley, and panels. There's stuff that you need to have running all weekend. There's stuff that you don't necessarily have the staff to run. Places that you need to bring in so that they can, like we talked about earlier, have their place to shine.
Yep.
Right. So, for example, we were talking about the maid cafe. Mm-hmm. You know, having the maid cafe get their own room. He's smiling at me.
It's silly but wonderful. Yeah.
Giving the maid cafe their own room for the weekend.
Yep.
We've got the dungeon crawl, LARPing, all kinds of stuff like that that will come out and provide entertainment. A board game room, a video game room. Stuff that people want to come out and run it themselves. You're just giving them a spotlight, basically.
I got you. But this is all your decision on what is the programming for the event. Like, this didn't factor into your hotel negotiations and all this putting on and all the budget and legal work. Is this once they said, okay, you're a con, you decided, hey, we're going to fill it with this? Or were there sort of like restrictions and regulations and stuff like that?
A little bit of both.
Okay.
Going into an event center, you need an idea in mind of what you want to put in it.
Okay.
Because you need to know what space you're looking for.
Gotcha.
So, for example, when we were going into Phantom Lexicon, we were like, all right, we need an artist alley, a dealer's room, a video game room, a board game room, three panel rooms, yep. VIP lounge, and, you know, a kitchen sink.
just to tie it all together.
You always need a kitchen sink.
But, of course, that changes once you go into it. The three panel rooms, we knew something was going to go in there, you know, whether it be panels or a weekend-long event like the board game room or Kirikira ended up. You know, the dungeon crawl. You go into it with a general idea, and then you see how it plays out. The hotel or convention center will absolutely tell you, you cannot have this, you cannot do this past a certain time. You can't have, the big one that everyone runs into is no outside food or drink.
Oh, okay. So you have to have sort of like food vendors or like some sort of consideration like that?
That's how the hotel makes a lot of their money.
Oh, it's all, okay. That makes sense. Yep.
You can put things in your contract that helps get around that. But for the most part, yeah, they're going to want food and beverage exclusivity.
That's crazy.
Interesting.
Are there any sort of like, this is my only experience going to like shows downtown. Is there any sort of, did you guys run into like noise complaints or it has to be done by a certain time? Like that sort of stuff?
Absolutely.
Oh, that's crazy.
For example, in our contract, we get fined money if we go past a certain hour with things like the rave or the masquerade ball. They're going to be loud and disrupt guests.
But you did say rave and masquerade rave. Ball. Is that something that's coming up at Fandom Legacy Con?
Why, yes, it is.
Maybe.
There's a rave? yes. I love it.
Mike, remember what clan Mikey and I sorted into?
Yeah, life's a party.
Yes.
Enclave, let's get it.
Let's get it. One thing I was, while we were talking here, one thing that came to mind, it's kind of a sort of a backtrack, but not really. It's still in this conversation. When you're doing so you're having all those applications coming in for panels and you're sorting through them, the ones that checked or not checked the box and you're figuring all that out. You had an idea of a vision for your convention, whatever convention you're doing, you have to have a vision for it. Mm-hmm. And then I guess basically, is it as simple as, well, the thing this person's offering is something that fits into our vision?
Simple as that. Do they check out? Are they competent people? Are they on any lists? And do they fit in? Are they nice people?
You have access to the lists?
Everyone keeps their own lists.
Oh. Interesting.
So speaking about those people, the special events of the con and people that are going to show up, are there people that you reached out to that you were excited to hear back from that are going to be taking part in Phantom Lexicon?
So
the Assuming Positions podcast guys,
other than us, oh, I know wait. We're special.
No, that's a great segue into it. So a lot of the people you're going to reach out to, depending on what kind of convention you're running, yep. right? So Mary and I, you know, Mary can talk about it a little bit, but our initial idea was no guests.
Mm-hmm. Until Anime Dallas, even. We were thinking, you know, we're going to focus entirely on the community, on the people, and we're going to have zero guests.
That's a pretty bold move for a convention because, like, it seems to be – I would just make the argument that if you're starting a convention, you go with the defaults, and the defaults are just guests so people have somebody to just pay attention to and take a little bit of a heat off of you. So what was it? You said no guests, but obviously you had something in mind to, I guess, take the place of guests?
We were going to focus entirely on interactivity and keeping people engaged.
Oh, I love it.
But I forget what actually made us turn on guests. I think it was – one of our voice actors, wasn't it?
So what ends up happening a lot of the time is a convention will start and they'll have a guest list in mind mm-hmm. or they'll have a group of people that they already know, which is how a lot of conventions start. They'll have somebody that knows, you know, 20-something voice actors because they have a connection and that's how they start.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
So either you'll go into it with no guests in mind or you'll have a guest list in mind, but there's a lot of voice actors and a lot of talent that will reach out to you to sort of self-promote and get out there.
Oh, I got you.
So what ended up happening with us is, you know, you guys were one of the first ones that we talked to. We talked to you guys at Anime Dallas, mm-hmm. and we really liked the way that you guys worked. So we were like, all right, let's approach these guys to come out and host. Thomas McKee approached us at our booth there. He's a voice actor. Really great guy. You know, we ended up getting ramen after our new favorite ramen shop. Who knew? We've also got a lot of emails from voice actors, from talent that wanted to come out, that were interested. Some of them were above our price point, as they will be.
That makes sense.
Some of them were not so nice, as you know, some
they did, people. They didn't check the checkbox that says, I'm not a jerk.
And some of them were really, really great guys. Like, gotcha. For example, Brian Beacock, he reached out to us. And this was very early in our infancy of the convention. And we initially had to deny him, right, Lev? We didn't have the budget.
No, it's true. For those of you who don't know him, Brian Beacock was one of the characters in the third season of Digimon. He was one of the main characters.
Personally, one of my favorite shows of all time was season 3 of Digimon. He was Takato, the main character.
Yep. And he's been in pretty much everything.
Yeah, he's had hundreds of roles. It's ridiculous. This guy's been everywhere.
But you had to turn him down at first because we had budget concerns. Yeah, exactly. That makes sense.
And later on, when our budget opened up a little bit, we had some good fortune.
There you go.
We reached back out to him and we were like, hey, you still want to come out? And he was very excited. Odin Makes, we talked to him at Anime Dallas.
Yep.
Really great guy.
We ended up bringing him out. And then my favorite story from the convention, Hiroshi Kanatani. Hiroshi initially signed up to just be a regular artist in the artist alley.
Just to be part of the room, yeah.
Just to be part of the room. And Hiroshi is a great guy, but English is not his first language.
Oh, that's a little bit of a hurdle, yeah.
So he signed up as an artist, and he checked the box.
Uh-oh, no!
So we were initially going to deny him, and there was bits of it that weren't completed and whatnot, you know, perfectly understandable.
Yep.
But he emailed us, and he provided us with some of his art, and I said to Mary, I was like, doesn't this look really familiar?
It looked really familiar because Zach loves Godzilla, and this guy has been commissioned by Toho to do Godzilla artwork.
He's a professional Godzilla artist. and he was applying just to be a regular artist or dealer.
That's crazy.
And we had no idea until he reached out, and I said, come out as a celebrity. What are you doing?
Yeah.
And then he actually brought out Matt Frank. He emailed Matt Frank, another professional Godzilla artist, a friend of his.
There you go.
And they're good buddies. And Matt was like, all right, yeah, sure, let's do it. Let's have fun with it.
Yeah, Matt Frank's actually known as the Kaiju King because he's done a whole lot of Godzilla artwork for the comics.
That's awesome.
And he lives right here in the Dallas area. And he's also done Beast Wars and a couple other things too.
Yeah, it's about networking. It's about being available. It's about, you know, being a friendly guy to talk to and knowing friendly people.
Makes sense.
So not everyone's going to fall into your lap like some of them did, but
all of them really.
Yeah. Well, no, it does.
Don't give away all the secrets.
It does kind of sound like you guys were like, let's do a new thing and not have guests. And then all these great guests started being like, can we be there? And you're like, we can't say no. This would be silly to say no. So again, you talked about being flexible. That's definitely,
Yeah.
Being flexible.
And it all came from the network of the community that you're trying to build and foster. Yeah, that's even really better. Cool, it's not somebody that you're just going to a website to hire, be like, oh, you're this price. You're in our budget for the con. It's not any of that. It's like, oh, we have a connection and you seem like a good person. We would like you to be part of our party.
You hit on something very important for us when we hire celebrities.
Yep.
Being a good person, being personable, being likable. I have absolutely no interest in hiring somebody that is not nice to the community.
Understood. We're right there with you. As a podcast that's all about positivity, we are all about that connection over just the price point or whatever the person has to sell, for sure. But speaking of network and people that we're friends with and bringing everybody that we know that's involved into this con, I know that one aspect of this con is that you guys are doing this for a little bit of charity as well. It's not just, you're not just making money for yourself. You are growing a community and wanting to give back and participate. Tell me a little bit about that. What's involved in that aspect?
You know, as soon as we decided that we were going to run a con, I personally really wanted to make sure that some of our money went to a charity. Because I'm all about giving back to the community.
That's awesome.
You know, if we're going to build something, then we want to bring people up with us. So we found during the Let's Play convention, I think, a group called Extra Life. And they're all about gaming and live streaming, providing money through tournaments to children's hospitals. So that's one of our major donation things for the convention.
Absolutely.
And that's great. I mean, not only are you helping people video game, which is boosting the nerd community, but you're also helping kids at the same time. So that's a bonus. That's awesome.
Some of the programs that are out there, myself and my brother would not be around anymore if they weren't out there.
Oh, wow.
So we definitely wanted to give back where we could.
That's understandable and very noble. That's awesome.
That's great.
So if people come out to this convention, not only are they helping you guys, you're helping us build a new community with Phantom Legacy Con. You're helping contribute to charities and all that. How else can people get involved? Where do they go for registration? Where do they go to find out more about this? Like, how can people get involved? What's that step of it?
So you're obviously always looking for volunteers in the community.
Yep.
More importantly than looking for the volunteers, because there's always people willing to. All you got to do is just put the word out. Hey, everyone wants a free con ticket and a free t-shirt, right?
Yeah. I want to go hang out. Yeah.
So that part isn't terribly difficult. The management of them, the training of them, the printing of like the registration materials, it's those little nitty gritty pieces that you have to start thinking about way in advance. We actually have somebody that's a staff member that is dedicated just to that thought process. I highly recommend that. For example, you would never think, okay, you need this many weekend passes printed with this fine print on the back.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what is that going to cost? What's the printing time on that? You know, who's going to put those together? Because they don't come pre-put together. You got to have somebody build them.
Yeah, and make it specific to your con, for
exactly.
sure.
Exactly. Swag bags, stuff like that. And when you're dealing with the hundreds of people that you're looking at, that's a huge undertaking. So really, when you're getting ready to put this on, when you're getting close, think through the nitty-gritty. As absolutely tedious as that is, think through what kind of training your staff is going to need, what kind of training your volunteers are going to need. How are you taking credit cards? What is that system going to look like? What are your lines going to look like? Because that's something that goes very, very overlooked sometimes.
I wouldn't even have thought about it, yeah.
It's very obvious when it does go overlooked. Have you guys ever been to a con and it's been horrible, horrible registration lines?
Sure.
Oh, yeah, out the door. And it's just, all it is you're standing in line to pick up a badge and just check in. How hard can that be? But it sounds like they either didn't hire a specific person like you guys are considering, or they just, it wasn't a thought to them. So
We've been the one where they didn't have this. They would literally find you on the computer and then print out the badge while you're standing there and then put it into the badge holder. Can you think of how long that would take?
That's crazy.
Yeah, it took forever.
and it's not something you'd think about. You'd get there and go, oh goodness, this is gonna take 10 minutes a person.
Yeah.
So think about that sort of stuff before you get there.
Yep.
Think about the training. Because you can't just expect a volunteer to come out and know what they're doing.
Oh, for sure.
And then the last little bit of advice I want to give you guys is how to work with your hotels. Make friends with your coordinators. I've been on the phone with Sandy Thomas, who's my contact at the Hyatt Regency North Dallas.
There you go.
I've been on the phone with her weekly, And going up to the con, it's going to be pretty close to daily. Make friends with them, goof around with them, get to know them, and learn the lingo so that you can communicate a little bit easier. And learn where they get their business and where they get their value from you guys so that you can enhance that.
Yeah, because they don't really know, like, you're a con coming to them, and if you're a first-year con, they don't really know what you're coming to them for, so they have to have experience with other cons and all that stuff to sort of verify you, maybe?
That's, a lot of it comes into that. A lot of it is you educating them on your business and them educating you on theirs. And you have to know where they get their break-even, where they get their bonus out of it. Like, they need to sell hotel rooms. They need to sell food, and that's where they make their money. So help them do that, and everything is going to be wonderful.
I like the message of make friends with that person and build the community, because that's what it's all about, is causing smiles with people, shaking hands with people, meeting them face-to-face and saying, hey, I have this idea. You can help me with this idea. How can we work together to make this idea happen?
And there will be problems. The more friendly the relationship is, the more freely you can communicate, the easier all that's going to be to solve when it comes up. Because there will be problems. Mm-hmm. Guaranteed.
Wait, you mean a con isn't just problem-free? You guys didn't just set it up?
Set it up and let it run? Spin it like a top?
One last bit of advice. Now that you've said that.
Yes.
As the con chairs, do not assign yourself any work at the actual con, because all of your work is going to be putting out fires constantly.
Yeah, I understand.
100% makes sense.
Putting out fires.
So, yeah. Wow. So, everybody, you should know exactly how to go run a con now. So, go start one.
Let's put more cons out there.
No, actually, the advice in the first episode was don't do it.
Do not run a con.
Second piece of advice, right? Come to Fandom Legacy Con, March 6th through 8th at the Hyatt Regency Dallas.
Yes. So, yeah, let everyone know one more time where we're going to be in March.
March 6th through 8th, we're going to be at Fandom Legacy Con at the Hyatt Regency, North Dallas.
And you can find us on social media just at Fandom Legacy Con. So that's Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We're going to be launching our Discord soon and all kinds of fun stuff. FandomLegacyCon.com. And yeah, we'll see you guys there. Live your legacy. We love you guys.
Awesome. We will be there. And you can find us on all our social medias at Assuming Pod. Do I smell... Is the pizza burning?
We have to put out a fire. I think the pizza is on fire.
I warned you.
So you can follow us on all our social medias at Assuming Pod. You can send us a Gmail, assumingpositions@gmail.com. Thanks, Zach and Mary, for being here once again. It's so much fun talking to you and learning this inside baseball stuff about making a convention.
Oh, that's great.
We want to thank that guy, Brad, for doing our announcing, Not Scott Productions for our equipment, Jazzar for doing our music. And thank you all so much for listening. Come out to Fandom Legacy so you can see us. You can see our cool new bowling shirts. Ooh. They're embroidered with our logo on it.
They do look really cool.
And we'll also have staff shirts on, too. With multiple shirts. We're going to have costume changes.
Costume changes. Yeah. I feel like a cosplayer already.
Yeah. So come out. Thanks, everybody.
Bye. I just want you to know that you both made it onto the podcast with that whole thing. That's how that episode ends.